Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry.
And my name is Jonathan Brocklehurst. It's our aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future issues.
So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we will be exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, the decisions we make, and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. And that is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you are interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations.
Thank you.
That was a lovely piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're about to go into our interview with our very special guest today. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. And to be in touch with us, please do go and visit the UK Health Radio website, where you can find all content here from the Foot Health Show. So without any further ado, here's our interview with our very special guest.
So I'm joined today by Emma Price, who's Clinical Director of Superfoot in Cheltenham and also co-founder of Podopedia. Welcome, Emma. Really, really delighted to make your acquaintance today. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
No problem at all. And I was just fascinated because your journey is really interesting, actually, coming from University of Durham and zoology and coming into podiatry. What was the journey there? How did you come to that?
So I was a really regular kid, did my A-levels and went the university route, as I suppose most of us did. You know, I thought, well, I just have to go to university now. I've done my A-levels. Yeah. So wildlife and animals and conservation has always fascinated me. So when I got my offer from Durham, that made sense. You know, it's a good university and I thought it'll open doors. So off I went to Durham University, had a brilliant journey there, met loads of brilliant people. And there still wasn't kind of, you know, it wasn't just scratching the itch, you know. So I took a gap year, did some diving, again, met loads of brilliant people. And while I was diving, I started working as a dive master, which wasn't teaching because I wasn't an instructor, but it gave me a kind of a teaching vibe. You know, I was sort of assisting and helping those people improve their diving a little bit and helping them along. And I thought, okay, I'm enjoying this. When I got home, I looked into science teaching, which was my next step. Loved that, learned so much, unbelievable amounts of learning there. More than my students, maybe, I don't know. But
sure,
anyway, so secondary science teaching, which was again a wonderful experience. But again, wasn't quite what I wanted to do or where I wanted to be, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I then went back towards the animal kind of route and looked at veterinary medicine, which I actually got into vet school. But I don't know, again, it just wasn't quite working for me. And then my mum brilliantly retrained as a podiatrist. This was sort of just before I went into teaching. And I sort of watched her being successful and enjoying her clinic, running that business. And I thought, okay, it's just sort of pulling me in a little bit. My brother's a doctor, my family's full of nurses and theatre assistants and stuff. You know, it's kind of got that medical vibe going. And
so a lot of input there from your family, I imagine, is quite an encouragement. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So I've always been sort of science. Anyway, I spoke to mum one day and I said, I don't know if teaching's what I want to do. And she said, don't worry about what you want to be. Think about what you want your job to give you at the end of every day.
Yeah.
And I wrote a little list and it was helping others was massive at the top there. Using science, owning my own business or being some sort of business owner or in charge of my own day was quite important to me as well. And she sort of laughed and said, well, podiatry can do all of that for you. And I thought, oh, I hate it when she's right.
So, as they are.
There it is. So yeah, she's very inspirational. She went back to university in her 40s, and got her 2-1, and I followed in her footsteps, no pun intended, in 2010. So I graduated
Fantastic.
In 2013.
Brilliant. I mean, I certainly relate. I mean, I think that, and for some clinicians I know as well, that, you know, parents, family have been such an influence in actually seeing what is the whole profession. And my mother actually was very influential for me going into podiatry. I was a 19-year-old, just got into the RAF as an officer and decided before signing the dotted line that actually I wanted to have a career that could facilitate for the different interests I had and the different things. And actually, you know, that when I was there, there was a talk on the direction of where the RAF was going, and actually didn't fit quite with where I was really wanted to be. And when you sign up for 12 years, that's a long time. And I just felt that wasn't going to be, you know, where I wanted to flourish at that point. So actually, I then came to podiatry, and you just think that's a very different path and walk of life. But actually, my mum was very influential because she wasn't doing too well at the time. And I started helping her with her feet. She said, do you want to do podiatry? I said, what is that? I didn't know, obviously, a 19-year-old. And exactly. What is this? And I said, yeah, is that feet? And she said, oh, yeah, well, it's a bit more than that. But yeah, I was like, right, because she worked in a nursing home as a senior carer, and she'd seen that side from podiatrist and domiciliary. And I thought, right, okay. So I started exploring. I think for you, obviously, there's that sort of relatability in what is this? Let's go and find out more. And does it facilitate for the needs of life, etc., around that? And now certainly I find that that's fitted in really nicely. But just to kind of bring that towards you a little bit, actually, you know, how have you found it now, obviously, with your thriving business and what you've been doing, you know? And I've just seen, you know, with the state-of-the-art facilities that you have and how you've built that, what's been involved with that? How have you really come from right at the beginning to where you are now?
Tenacity, I think, to be honest. I just had quite a clear business plan. I finished my third year, I did my dissertation early. You know, it was my second degree, so I meant business. I was there to get a vocational qualification to follow this business plan, which I think is very, well, it is very different to how I structured my first degree, I can tell you that. So, yeah, I had a very clear business plan. I knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted a sort of a high street type brand, a bit like a Specsavers type, you know, brand, you know, something that people will recognize that could be repeatable if I wanted to go down that road. So got a branding agency and a web agency to help me. And we got our brand together and then just went looking for premises. I worked as an associate for a year or so until I found the right place in Cheltenham where I am. And yeah, found my home in a lovely little suburb called Montpellier, which is a really nice shopping district, which stood me in good stead. A lot of people sort of, you get the raised eyebrows, sort of, oh, you're in Montpellier. Ooh.
Yes.
So that worked. I've moved out of Montpellier since, but yeah, it was a good starting block for me. It's just sort of rented a shop, stuck the walls up, put my sign up and off I went kind of thing. And just me initially. And then I had a lovely, sort of admin assistant with me. I always wanted that front of house. You know, I know a lot of people start and say they do everything themselves.
Yeah.
But I thought, no, I'm going to do this properly. I'm going to have an admin, a receptionist to allow me to do my job, and they do their job. And it's just grown. I've just got more and more popular, started taking on associates, and then realized very quickly I needed employees.
Yes.
And now I've got, including myself, 4 podiatrists and 3 admin staff. So we're
fantastic.
We're blossoming. And yeah, I was very fortunate. I found a lovely premises the other side of town. He actually found me, but I was looking, actively looking, and he heard on the grapevine I was looking for premises. His podiatrist had just left, so he had rooms to rent. So the universe helped me out a little bit there. But
brilliant. And just to clarify, Montpellier, as in the UK, Cheltenham, Montpellier, not France. Yes, for our viewers in Europe. Yes. So if you're listening in France today, that is Montpellier, Cheltenham. that's brilliant. I mean, fantastic. A fascinating story as well, because, you know, when it comes to things like the pandemic, and I think of huge interest to everybody, whether that's someone setting up in business, in practice, not even someone who's necessarily in podiatry, just interested in foot health, how did you deal with the pandemic? Because that was such a big question that was asked so many times, and we just really wanted to get your take on that, and how did you manage?
I spent about a week crying. And and then I'm joking. It was tough. It was pretty, you know, you just had everything taken off you and you think, oh, okay, right. Thinking cap on, girl, come on, you know, you can get this sorted. So I pretty quickly decided that telehealth was going to be useful to me. So I use our practice management software, to enable me to take video conferences and video calls. And it then sort of allowed me to communicate safely with patients and just touch base with everybody. So I put everyone on furlough, cancelled everyone's appointments, and then called them all individually and said, look, I can't see you. I don't know when I'm going to be able to see you, but let's stay in touch. So I spent a lot of time, just one-on-one talking to everybody, which actually was lovely. And everyone had a good old chin wag, you know, in terms of what they were struggling with. And then 6 weeks later, we were allowed to slowly reopen, and I managed to sort of triage everybody, get them all back in safely. I did it solo, and then slowly brought members of staff back in when we knew what we were dealing with and vaccinations and everything else were coming on board. And
yes,
I have three clinical rooms, so I managed to sort of treat someone in one room and then treat the next person in the next room so we could air it and all this kind of stuff. But it was just really hard work. I did loads of online consultations. I've coached people how to cut their own toenails, which was more difficult than you'd think when they've got their phone inverted. So I'm saying go left and they're not doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh, the classic. Which one's left and which one's right, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, it's adapt or die, isn't it? It's one of those, you know, I didn't turn over a lot of money when I was doing those online consultations, but I brought in money and I managed to just keep everything going. And I still use online consultations. In fact, we use them a lot now. We've brought them into our practice. So when people have nail surgeries, we offer them the follow-ups. The first one is face-to-face, and then the follow-ups can be video. It's much more efficient use of our time.
Which
if there's
amazing.
A problem, we bring them in. If there's an orthotic patient who's had some orthoses and we want to just review and check in, that's all we do. It's 5 minutes included in the package kind of thing, and people are being seen with taking you know, charge of their treatment plan, but I'm getting six of those done in an hour instead of, you know, one or two. And also it's has a huge impact on our environmental impact on, you know, our local area.
Yes,
the biggest environmental impact that healthcare has is patient travel and staff travel. We've just had a lecture from a guy who's sort of talking to us about how to become a greener clinic, healthcare clinic, and patient travel is the NHS's one biggest environmental impact. So I feel really good about that as well.
That's fantastic. Wow.
So that's what's come out of COVID that's positive. But yeah, we coped. We just put a smile on our faces and we all got through it. I think we're all in the same boat.
And I think the big word you used was tenacity, because that, for, you know, clinicians and patients, has been, particularly during the pandemic, a really, really important thing. And I liked how actually, I think it was on your website, you listed a set elements of characteristics that you look for in somebody who works for you. And one of them was, I quite like this actually, it was be wow, actually. It was really, I thought that was really good. And I thought it would be great to elaborate on that, because encompassing all of the challenges that you get, what is it to be wow?
Just be innovative, educate yourself. Learn constantly. We make mistakes and we learn from them. We move forwards. You know, if, you know, I want to build a world-class practice. I don't want anything less than that.
Yeah.
So the people who are going to work with me need to be world-class. So if we're not constantly educating ourselves and being the best we can be, that, you know, we're all striving for that, at least we're, you know, it's not, you're not one of my people.
Yes. And I think that's a really good distinction to make, because often there can be this tendency to go down the complacency route and life kind of, you know, trundles along as it does, but actually saying, I want to innovate. I want to see better. I want to do better and actually see better results and outcomes for patients. That's amazing. I think that's, it's so important to have that message now. I think for me, with my students, when I'm teaching or lecturing, or even as a clinician, I worked in wound care for a bit, and actually noticing that it's very, very easy, especially if you're seeing, you know, how many ulcers per day, and you get into this sort of almost rut, and actually the quality of care can start to almost lose its continual increase, and you start to think, well, I'm used to this. I know that the same dressings will be used roughly, and the kind of chronicities are going to be fairly similar. And actually thinking, no, I'm going to see the patient individually. The care is individual, and actually, I want to be better and do better. And yeah, absolutely. And often for my students to see that they're looking to be better, and you know, even to the fine details and their soap notes, you know, things like that. It really does matter, right to the fine tooth comb of the details. So absolutely, and that's really encouraging, because I think for any clinicians listening today, that there's a real emphasis that we can put on, yes, be well and be better, rather than just see I'm doing the best I can, but yes, there's always more we can do. So that was that's really fascinating and excellent. Yeah, thank you so much. And I think in terms of, you know, going forward in the future, you mentioned telehealth. Now, I know that was a massive part of what came out of the pandemic. Where do you see the future going?
I think we're kidding ourselves if we think we can do virtual healthcare, you know, on a massive scale. But you're never going to replace hands-on care. Yeah. There's something very special about, you know, you touching someone's body, you're touching their feet, they feel cared for. And I don't think we can ever replace that with a telehealth conversation. But I certainly think one of my main aims in the next year, one of my main goals I'm setting myself and the clinic is to be as ecologically friendly and sustainable as we possibly can. And like I mentioned earlier, we're very aware that wasted journeys or the less what's the word I'm looking for? The less important journeys, you know, can we substitute those for telehealth or telephone conversations? And I really think people need to start to get used to it. You hear a lot of people complaining, your GP just wants to do a phone call. What good is that going to do? And I think if you listen well and you learn to read people, as I think podiatry is, you know, we are probably the experts in that, you know, we have time. Yeah. Physios are the same, you know, we are experts in reading people. Yeah. Really, really are. And I think you can do that on a teleconference call. I really do. I think you can listen to their tone of voice. I think you can look at their skin. You can listen to the words they're selecting just as well as you can face to face. And I really think in many circumstances, you can use it to your advantage, and you can you can increase the throughput of patients. Do you need someone, see someone? You can see someone, of course, but I really think it needs to be a hugely weighted part of our practice moving forwards. Yeah. And I think it'll go there. I also saw an interesting thing, I think it was in the podiatrist the other day, about these new virtual cameras that
students have.
So a teacher can say, I'm performing this test or I'm doing this, and students can log in and watch. You know, that's cool. I love technology. I'm always, my guys at work will tell you, I'm always looking for some new tech somewhere along the line. But
brilliant.
Yeah, I think we really need to think more about telehealth.
Yes.
From lots of different perspectives. And it can be cheaper. You know, you can provide a cheaper service by triaging people. You know, if you can charge, I don't know, 30 quid or something for 10 minutes of your time, rather than getting someone in for 70 quid new patient assessment when you actually, to be honest, yeah, that looks like gout, sir. Yeah. And perhaps a blood test would be more appropriate, come back once you've had those results.
But,
you know, you can save people's time, money, and reduce carbon footprints. I know I keep banging on about it, but it's important.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And on a note of absolutely that, is that across the globe, sharing information, whereas before there was the idea of, you know, how many people would jet across the world to such and such a conference, and actually we can do webinars and we can learn from different cultures and different ways of doing things and different healthcare systems. You know, in my own experience speaking to those in the US about their systems and how things are different in Europe and Australia recently as well. And actually, it's very, very interesting to see how actually a lot of different information and bits and pieces, technology included, are being shared. And obviously the pandemic kind of united us all in a sense of let's Zoom call or let's use a different format, Teams, meetings, etc. And actually it's made us more agile. It's made us more versatile with our treatments. So I'd certainly say, and added to that, in terms of prevention, obviously for myself being more in the wound care world, I mean, I think the sense of actually saying we can really prevent and actually notice things a lot sooner when it comes to a patient's foot health. So saying to a patient via telehealth, you know, here's what you could be looking for with regards to pre-ulcerative lesions, not even ulcers. You can look at the things that pre-state. Actually, that could really prevent and save. I mean, I think it's projected to be around £250 million worth of savings made if we actually get a patient at a pre-ulcerative state as opposed to the point of an ulcer occurring. I mean, that's really incredible. I mean, obviously, in your experience, what are some things that right now you feel are happening that, you know, in terms of telehealth, yes, and also in, like you said, when you're actually touching the patient's foot, for viewers, some who may have been hearing about podiatry for the very, very first time, what are some things that you would advise in terms of patients who are thinking about their feet again for the first time and maybe want to know a bit more?
On a general scale, footwear is probably my one thing. That's, I think, the power in good footwear choices is it's second to none. I'm a big advocate of education, as you probably know, and no one leaves my clinic without understanding how to assess a shoe properly in the shop. I've got shoes in my clinic and I say, right, hold this shoe, what's good about it, you know, and they twist it and they turn it and they bend it and they look at it and I say, now compare it to this shoe, and, you know, and it's a little sort of game I play when I've got a little bit of time, and they all leave no understanding what is a good shoe and why. And I say, right, now compare, when you next buy a pair of shoes, either buy this pair or when you next buy a pair of shoes, this is what you're looking for. That's probably the one thing I would say to all patients. I don't care who you are. This is footwear, and you can probably avoid most things if you have a good pair of shoes on.
I completely agree. I think so. And three things that I mentioned, and a lot of the viewers will have heard me talking about this constantly over the last few months, is this idea of a deep and wide toe box, that midfoot fastening that's adjustable with the laces or the Velcro, and that supportive heel counter, and all of these things, you know, like, as you know, very, you know, it's, and the patients benefit from that information. But obviously there's so much more to it, which is you can delve in a bit deeper and go, indoor footwear, how about outdoor footwear? How does that affect? And then, you know, often the big question was asked, as a percentage of your day, how much time do you spend indoors as opposed to outdoors? And they'll say, well, actually, it's about 75%. Oh, goodness, let's focus on the 75% right now, which is actually the big problem, which is the slippers that you're wearing from Marks and Spencer's. Other brands are available. And also those sorts of things, you know. And actually, it's incredible how, you know, that can suddenly spark a conversation that may never have happened. And actually, like you're saying, you're really focusing in with patients on the fundamentals can then just affect everything else. And the trust that's built is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So, yeah. Oh, it's fascinating. And so, really, I think that's a lovely point to end, really, which is to really bring to light for everybody the work that you've been doing, plus the importance of that advice to everyone across the globe, really, which is really pay attention to our footwear and what we're wearing every day, because it houses our feet for many, many years until we change them. And actually, you know, changing them is the big difference, often from the brogues I used to wear to the wider footwear that actually is more conforming to my feet and actually does protect my first and fifth joints and the fifth, we talked about the plantar metatarsophalangeal joints and actually all of this is just so, so important. So I just want to say a massive thank you to you, Emma, for the time you've taken to be with us, for your expertise and the success in your business. Congratulations. And we'll hope to speak to you soon.
Great. I just want to end on our Podipedia website. We're going to be doing a footwear sort of new section to our YouTube channel. So if anyone is super interested in which high street shoes are good and bad, you're going to see me and Sam running around shoe shops, probably getting told off, evaluating in a nice way the footwear and what we like about them and what we don't. So it's going to be a bit of fun. So you can watch out, and that's on podipedia.co.uk.
Fantastic. Please check that out, everyone. And so for those listening today, this is the Foot Health Show. You've been listening to myself, Jonathan Brockhurst, and my special guest today, Emma. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations. Thank you.
That was a fantastic piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're going to look at the four key ingredients to good footwear. Each week, I'm going to be saying this because I feel that it's important that whether we're a patient or a clinician or just genuinely very interested in looking after our feet, I think it's important to look at these four key ingredients. Number one, a deep and wide toe box. This is important because our first toe joint tends to take most of the load in the initial stage of what's known as the gait cycle, which is when we walk and we move. And in that process, the toes also play a key part in disseminating the forces that are acting on the feet. And the distribution of that force is aided by a deep and wide toe box. It means there's less chance of the joints being squeezed both at the sides of both the first and the fifth toe, but also it enables us to be able to flex the toe, our toes upwards and downwards in a motion that enables us to have better control and balance of our movement. The second key ingredient is a secure midfoot fastening, such as Velcro or laces. I mean, this is really important because without this, we are unable to control the forces across the foot and to stabilize the full extent of our movement. For example, a slip-on shoe may cover the entirety of the foot. It may protect the foot to some degree from stepping on something sharp or from coming across objects that may hit the sides of the foot. However, the movement or biomechanics of the foot, as we call it, may be impacted through shearing forces. So each forward motion can be impacted by the toes hitting the ends of the shoe because there isn't something to keep the middle of the foot in place. And that is why a secure midfoot fastening such as Velcro or laces is beneficial for us in our everyday lives, such as trainers, but also important in our indoor footwear, such as having a Velcro secure fastening for our slippers if we choose to use slippers. Certainly important that we wear shoes indoors to protect our feet because there can be objects that can be sharp, such as unnoticed sharp objects as pins, bits of shades of wood if they've come off objects, of furniture, etc. But really important we're monitoring our home and our surroundings as much as possible to avoid any accidents from occurring. Thirdly, it's really important to have a secure, stable and protective heel counter. This is the part of the footwear that essentially wraps around the ankle and the back of the foot, or what's known as the hind foot. This is really important also as it keeps the foot stable and secure within the confines of the shoe. This means that when we commence what's known as the heel strike during the gait cycle, it means that we can move off without any slippage, without any changes to the biomechanics or the forces acting on the foot to a large extent. So something like flip-flops, for example, without that stable heel counter, it puts more pressure on the toes to be able to grip onto the flip-flop to keep us moving forward, which can in the long term result in toe deformities occurring, such as hammer toe or clawed toes. It's also really important, the fourth ingredient to round this off, is a cushioned insole. Plenty of footwear may look aesthetically pleasing and very, very nice to possibly to look at and to wear or to notice to some degree, but without a cushioning insole, especially if we're walking lengths that require us to have that comfort, but also for there to be good shock absorption, we need to have a cushioned insole. So, for example, EVA as a material is something that supports the bottom of the foot, the sole of the foot, but also a material such as Poron can do similar. And these are two examples of some of the kinds of materials that are used nowadays. So if you're looking for insoles that would help your feet, these are two of many. And also I would encourage you to speak to your podiatrist or a professional in the line of podiatric medicine who can help you with understanding footwear. An orthotist is also a professional in footwear, in being able to make bespoke footwear too. So if you know an orthotist, they would be in a great position to be able to help you understand the right kind of footwear to be using. So thank you for listening. That's the four key ingredients of footwear. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we have been exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, and the decisions that we make and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. That is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world. I look forward to you listening in and tuning in again next time.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.